We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Eric Young. Eric is a freelance producer and director of photography currently based in the Midwest. He recently debuted his first feature-length documentary, The Blood is at the Doorstep, at the 2017 South by Southwest Film Festival. He has produced content and short documentaries for the New York Times, Vice News, Al Jazeera, PBS, and the Wall Street Journal. In 2016, he won a Midwest Emmy for his work on public television's Wisconsin Foodie. As a director of photography, he has worked with some of the world's largest brands and ad agencies to produce commercial content. He's a former Knoll Fellow and a two-time Bricko Ford Fund recipient for his documentary work. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
All right. So what inspired you to produce documentaries?
Oof. You know, that's something I kind of fell into. I was born and raised in California, and college was really difficult for me. I think I went to four different colleges in 6 years, and it wasn't because of failing grades. It was because I didn't know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. You know, I was 18 and trying to decide one major to study the rest of my life was extremely painful. Mm-hmm. So I started in business. Then I got an internship at my mom's job at her business. And I was just like, I don't think I can do this. So then I switched majors, switched schools, ended up studying graphic design. I really wanted to do photo and video back then. But graphic design was like the business of art, and I figured it encompassed a lot of the different things. But even then, college was really difficult because I took an anthropology class. I was like, whoa, this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I took a psychology class. I was like, I could do this. Sociology, you know, even mathematics and film studies, everything. I was just like, oh man, all this is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I didn't really necessarily want to be an academic, but I think, I don't think I realized it till much later, but, you know, documentary filmmaking kind of encompasses all of those practices because you can be studying, you know, anthropological things or societal things. And obviously there's art and filmmaking involved. So it kind of encompasses a lot of different backgrounds. You kind of have to be a jack of all trades a little bit in filmmaking because oftentimes due to budgetary constraints, you're doing more than one role anyway. So, so yeah, I kind of fell into it, and growing up, it's not really like a profession that people was like, oh, I'm going to be a documentary filmmaker. I mean, maybe some people do, but I mean, that was not even in my wheelhouse at all growing up, you know? So I don't know, just kept pushing forward and making mistakes, and eventually, I guess, became a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, that's really quite interesting, though, as far as the spin that you said, how it kind of encompasses all the subjects of life.
Yeah, it really does.
It's really quite fascinating just to continue. It's like you're self-educating the entire time you're working on the documentary. So that's
absolutely
really cool. So, Eric, you've been in freelance your entire professional career. How did you decide that was the path to take?
Well, almost. I graduated college in 2008, which was a great time to get into the job market.
Yeah.
Sarcasm. So I moved out to Milwaukee from San Diego at the time. I was dating a girl, and she moved out here to get her PhD, and I followed her. That lasted about a month once I got here. But I ended up getting a job at Pabst Riverside Turner. It's a group of music venues here in Milwaukee. A lot of great bands. It was a really fun first job. Did not pay very much, but you had a lot of freedom. Like I started a video series there, and I was doing a lot of photography, and I think they liked having young, ambitious people because it's like, oh, this is like a treat that we get to give him extra work. Like, he really likes this.
Yeah.
And then after a while, it's just like, you know, all I want to do is photo and video. I don't want to do web graphic design stuff.
Yeah.
And I just like doing that. And there wasn't really a job for that. I had the opportunity to work on a documentary for like a week. And after I worked on that, I came back to work and I was just like, you know, this is all I want to do. And like, well, there's not a real, we don't have a job, a video job here. And I was like, all right, well, I guess it's time for me to leave. And I just kind of quit. I didn't have a plan. I wouldn't recommend that to everyone. But
wow, yeah.
I was single, didn't have any kids. My rent at the time was $325. So
unheard of nowadays.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think in Milwaukee, it's still, my rent's not too much more than that now. But, you know, it was very cheap. My cost of living was very cheap. So I was like, I don't want to be doing this in 5 years. I don't want to be doing this tomorrow. But the longer I stay here, the harder it's going to be to get out of doing this, you know? So I was just like, I have to quit now. And it put me in a bad position, but it put me in a very motivated position to make it work. So at that point, I was just reaching out to every photographer in town and being like, hey, can you sit down for coffee, or do you need an assistant, or I'll work for free, or, you know, just trying to get in the loop, not even really trying to make money, but trying to figure out how you make money down the line.
Sure.
Doing this, you know? So I was harassing everybody, and if they didn't respond to my email, you know, I'd give them a week or two and then I'd send them another one. And eventually, you know, it's like I sat down with a lot of people and made a lot of contacts, and I did a lot of jobs that I didn't want to do, but or you know, especially in photography and video, it's like there's a lot of niches.
Sure.
You can get
yep.
into
yep.
And it's usually segmented off, like there's people that are just food photographers, people that are just fashion photographers, you know, it's very segmented. And so I got into a lot of different fields that by being in those fields, I realized this is not what I want to do at all, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, you just keep bouncing around and then eventually it's like a funnel. You figure out where you're going. And so I did that for a while. I just assisted, did video and photo assisting for years, and then, for probably 3 years, but, I've been completely freelance for 7 years, and probably the first 3 years was just shooting on other people's stuff or freelancing
yeah.
and assisting. The last 4 years has probably been me being hired as a director of photography on projects
mm-hmm.
and then producing my own projects and pitching them places, and then making my own films, and then working on a lot of commercial projects as well.
Sure. And with the background and working with some larger brands and ad agencies, I'm sure you somewhat built a name for yourself as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't done a lot of marketing. I mean, I have a website, but it's, I don't really, I don't know how that works. You know, it's like I met a lot of people and worked on a lot of smaller jobs and got, you know, you kind of move your way up.
That's called networking, Eric.
Yeah, is that what it is? Is that what I'm here for?
Yes.
Yeah. And then I don't know how it really happens. You know, it's a lot of word of mouth stuff now, so it's good.
Yeah, well, why don't you share with us a little bit about the process of making a film? What goes into it?
Well, I just finished my first feature-length documentary. It's called The Blood Is at the Doorstep, and I learned a lot through that process. I'm kind of, growing up, I was an only child, so I was used to just doing things myself. Like, even now, I go to eat by myself all the time. If there's, like, a concert, I'll be like, you know, if I go by myself, I don't have to adhere to anybody else's plans, you know? So I go places a lot by myself. So making a film, you know, I try to bring that ethos because it's like, hey, I didn't have a budget to pay people.
Yeah.
But I shoot and direct and produce all myself. So it's just like, and I got into a project where it's like, you know, I didn't really know it was going to be a feature-length film. It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
But over time, I realized filmmaking is a team effort. You know, you can do it by yourself, but it's really going to hinder the project. And I really needed to start opening up because there was times I was on the road where things were happening back in Milwaukee that needed to be covered. So I tapped into my resources. You know, Milwaukee's got a small film community. We have like the Milwaukee Film, the organization, and then we have a lot of local filmmakers. And so I was calling a lot of favors with people I knew. So people helping to shoot for free, maybe do audio, people to help edit, and then tapping into, you know, supporters of the filmmaking community here. So we got some private donations, and then we won a couple of big grants from Milwaukee Film as well.
Cool.
But it really is a team and collaborative effort. And another big thing is all my contacts were really in, you know, news journalism, not necessarily documentary filmmaking. You know, there's a lot of overlap there, but the networks are completely different. And I was applying for a lot of grants and got rejected by all of those grants except for the local Milwaukee ones, which was very discouraging. But, you know, I'm asking people for tens of thousands of dollars to make a film that don't know who I am. And, you know, this happens all over the country where people are applying for these grants and you're up against the top name established documentary filmmakers. And so what I realized probably too late is that you really need to go and network with these people where they're at. You know, they're not in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. These people are in New York or LA. They're at film festivals. So pretty late in the process, I started just, you know, ponying up the money and taking a chance and kind of going to some of these bigger market documentary film festivals and like pitch forums and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't my project didn't even get into these things. But I'm like, I'm just going to go and show up and see what happens. So I went to some of these documentary forums and I would see who's on the panel. I would look at their picture and make like my own little Facebook thing where it's like, this is their face. This is their name. This is their title. This is where they work. And then I would go to their panels and sit in the front row and listen to what they were, you know, listen to what they're saying. Then I'm taking notes, not necessarily what they're saying, but conversation starters to validate who I am. So it's like whether it's working on a common project that they had their hands on or working for a common company, just some form of like, hey, oh, we know this person, or just some way to connect myself that I deserve to be there. And because there's a million people trying to talk to them.
Oh,
you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
So just trying to find some common place to start a conversation, then have a really tight pitch for what my film was about, and then give them my business card and get out, you know, because there's a lot of people there. So just a real short brief. You don't want to overstay your welcome, but give them enough to be interested and then follow up via email or see if they're available for coffee during the duration of that film festival. So I started doing that and probably later in the process. But unfortunately, that's a lot of what filmmaking is, too. If you're going to do that as a viable career, it's networking. Like filmmaking is an expensive sport, and you know, you really gotta it is like people don't like, you can have a great project and it could be well-written grant, but giving tens of thousands of dollars to people, it's like they want to know who you are, because it's really hard to read between the lines on black and white print. You know, they want to know, like, see your heart and see who you are and see if you are the right person to tell these stories. So I got some festivals coming up on the docket. I just finished this film and trying to like get it in the right hands for a permanent life. So there's a couple festivals I'm going to be checking out coming up as well.
That's cool. This is, your story is quite extraordinary, I would say. I mean, you really have a no fear mentality and you're willing to do whatever it takes to get it done, which is quite inspiring, I hope, to a number of our listeners.
Well, I wouldn't say it's no fear. It's
well, you did it. You know, you said you identified, I need to be where these people are, and you jumped on a plane. You sat in the front row. You made notes, and then you got in front of the person that you needed to talk to, and said, "This is who I am. This is what I'm interested in." And you left. Yeah. I mean, there, I would say there's no fear there, because I don't know many other people that'd be willing to take those same steps that you took.
Well, I will say that. I was self-conscious about it a lot of the time, you know, but you know, I made a documentary film that is very, I feel like it touches on a very important issue. And this family gave me 3 years of their lives, mm-hmm. to tell their story. And my motivating factor was, you know, if I just wasted 3 years of this family's life and put a camera in their face for 3 years and like this film doesn't do anything, then I wasted their time and kind of like, you know, so it was really like fighting for the film. Like I kind of removed my ego and my personality from it. But it, when I was sitting in the hotel room every morning, like about to go to these things, I was like, this is painful. What am I doing? Like, this is so weird and gross just to accost these people up to the panels. But I mean, that's what they're there for too. They're there to network. They know how the game works. So
yeah.
It's like, to say I was fearless, I don't know. That's, there was fear for sure, but I was just like, I got to do it.
But you proceeded. Just, you didn't let that fear conquer your decision making.
Sure.
You just kind of overcame it. And that's what I think is quite extraordinary, because most people just let, you know, sit and sulk in the fear. So that being said, you know, to a number of people, networking is really a scary word that invokes fear and hesitation and uncertainty. I'd love to hear a story, your most successful or favorite networking story that you have.
Well, there's a couple that come to mind, but I would say probably the biggest one that kind of led, that was kind of happened in a very weird organic way that led to a lot of really great opportunities was I was in New York shooting on a friend's documentary. He was doing a documentary about artisanal cheese.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of, it was great because we got to go hang out at like the best restaurants in New York. I think we're at Daniel in Manhattan.
Wow.
And then we got to hang out with like the fanciest chefs. And,
that's
you know,
awesome.
And you just get, they just want to give you free food. So I was like, yeah, man, that sounds awesome. I will help you out with your documentary. But anyway, so we're in Manhattan and we're shooting at Daniel. And which is a really fancy restaurant. And there was another film crew in there. It was like a one-man band type of situation. There was a woman. Her name was Reem McCool. And she, we were both kind of fighting for the same area at the same time. And it was very limited because they were going to open for the restaurant in a couple hours. So they were kind of rushing both of us. And eventually I stopped. I was like, this really is not helpful. I was like, how about I help you get your shoot done and then you can help me and we'll both stay out of each other's way. I think it'll just work quicker that way. And it was very dark in there and she's working without light. So I like let her use my light. And then came to find out she's a video journalist for the New York Times. And so we exchanged information and I followed up with her later. And then when I started working on the, on my film, which was then titled Mothers for Justice, about the Dontre Hamilton case here in Milwaukee. I was working on pitches to kind of get it out there because I didn't have any funding. I felt it was an important story that they would want to cover about outside investigations and officer-related deaths. So I pitched it to Reem, and she got me in touch with her producers at the New York Times. And I sent it their way, didn't hear a response. And Reeman moved on to that time. She worked at the Wall Street Journal. So she pitched it to her bosses there. They passed on it. But next time I was out there, you know, she invited me into the Wall Street Journal. I got a whole tour. But then while I was out there, again, I followed up with the New York Times again while I was in New York. I was like, look, I'm in New York. I'm going to be here till Friday. This is a pitch I'm working on. Do you have time to meet? And then Thursday night, I was leaving Friday. They're like, oh, yeah, you should come in. So I went into the New York Times and had a meeting there. And they ended up picking up the story. I did a 10-minute doc for them about the case. And then I ended up doing work for the Wall Street Journal. And it was all because I just randomly met this woman shooting on a cheese doc and, you know, helping her, like taking time to like just talk with her instead of like being angry at each other, getting in each other's way.
Yeah.
We just like work together and then
and share your equipment.
And it led to, you know, things. I mean, I wasn't even thinking in a network.
Sure.
I was thinking in a practical mind space at that time, but it led to a lot of really great things. And honestly, like once I got that New York Times gig, like pretty much every other door opens up to you. Like you're immediately legitimized, you know, where it's like now people don't even think twice. They see the New York Times credit and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you can do whatever. You know?
That's awesome.
It was a great opportunity.
Wow, I hope you send her some nice chocolates or something as a thank you. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm sure you stay in touch with her still.
Yeah. She's great. She lives in London now, but yeah, she's awesome.
Well, who knows what kind of doors that'll open for you too. Yeah, right. All right. So large or small, it's important to continue to connect with your network. How do you stay in front of or best nurture your network?
A lot of my network is, I mean, this is kind of my life. So especially locally, a lot of my network, like literally is my friends now, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's organic. I don't feel like I'm nurturing it or anything like that. But then, a lot of the people that I work with that are maybe further apart, maybe they live in New York. A lot of my contacts for work come out of New York.
Sure.
But I follow a lot of these people on social media, you know,
yeah.
Liking, retweeting, commenting at people. You know, it's not like I'm doing it necessarily for networking, but we have a lot of similar interests and work on a lot of similar projects. And so it just kind of, you know, you just keep in people's mindset. And it's like, that's not necessarily what I'm really trying to do, but a little bit, you know, I'm trying to like stay on people's radars.
By the way, I'm still here, yeah. Right?
And I try to make it out to New York probably once every 6 weeks, 2 months. And whenever I'm out there, I just try and fill up my day with like grabbing coffee with people.
Checking in, yeah, seeing how people are doing.
For sure. And, you know, it's like I don't really have anything to pitch them or sell them, but usually people are really cool about meeting up. I think, and a lot of the people that hire me, it's like awesome for them to know someone that could do work in the Midwest to them, because they're like, oh man, people know, like I don't have to send someone from New York or LA out
sure.
there.
Yeah.
It's like, actually people can do pretty good work here too.
Yep.
So it's always exciting for them to know someone that they can save a little bit of money on yeah. traveling costs. So.
Absolutely. That's really good. So I like how you use the word organic with regards to your networking. It's you're basically doing it. You're nurturing your network by, you know, engaging with them on social media or saying, hey, let's get that cup of coffee. But you don't have like a strict agenda or planned format. You just kind of do it organically, which is fantastic. So you're just a natural born networker.
And when you're in these fields, like you're going to cross paths with people
uh-huh.
a lot. So it's a... you don't have to have like a groundbreaking conversation. It's like, just introduce yourself, meet people. And then further down the line, next time you meet them, you might have that conversation, you know, but it's like planting that seed and putting yourself in someone's mind. Like I went to this film festival in the fall and like I told you, I was just like accosting these people at the end of their panels and just being like, I remembered who people's faces were. So they're waiting in line for another film. I could be like, oh, hey, you know, how you doing? My name's Eric. You know, and this film that you worked on, I really liked, and just briefly started a conversation. Oh, this is what I'm working on, you know? And so like that kind of happened when I was at a film festival in the fall. I met a guy from HBO who is one of their directors of programming for HBO documentaries. And so when I was at South by Southwest recently, I saw him down there and, I saw him in line at a film. I was like, oh, hey, you remember me? You know, we met at Kennedy. Oh, yeah. And we ended up going out for dinner and just catching up for a bit. And then he came to my film a couple of days later. So it's just good to maintain those relationships because you don't have to have a long conversation. It's just plant your seed in these people and then they'll recognize you at the next thing, you know, and then maybe something will happen then. You know, it's like you don't have to strike a deal or make a partnership the first time you meet someone, you know, yeah. You just ease into it, I guess.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, you kind of dove into this a little bit, but what advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
You know, when I started, it was just, honestly, it was a lot of, especially young people, you know, now, I mean, I'm not that old, but I'm a little bit older than I was when I got into this, but really, like, if there's people you look up to and admire their work, like, reach out to them. You'd be surprised at the response. A lot of people, like, when I went to New York for the first couple times, I'd reach out to a lot of the directors and people whose work I really admired. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps where I'm like only in town for a short amount of time.
Yep.
But I'd reach out to people and be like, hey, like I'm in town for this amount of time. Do you want to grab a beer or grab coffee? And a surprising amount of people whose work I really respect are like, oh yeah, sure. Yeah, let's meet up. And then some of these people I met up with, like, oh, I'm surprised you showed. Like, I've had people email you me before, but nobody ever actually shows up. You know, it's like, so, I mean, you'd be surprised. I think people are really open, especially younger people. You know, give it a shot. But really just a lot of it is just meeting up for coffee and talking. And and even now I try and give back. So when younger people reach out to me,
sure,
I try and foster that relationship because there's a lot of younger, way more talented people than me. They just don't know it yet. But it's like, it's good because you never know. Like, you could work with them in the future. They might be hiring you in the future.
Yeah.
But also it's just goodwill, you know. It's like, what is it, all ships, whatever, you know, rising tide situation.
Sure. Yeah, I don't, it's like not coming to me either, but.
But, but it's just, you know, especially like in a community where, like Milwaukee, where it's not really known for filmmaking, it's like if you can help a younger person come up, it's going to help everybody come up.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like you want to put your area on the map for these things. So
sounds like a really like pay it forward mentality.
Absolutely.
I mean, you connecting with all these other professionals in the industry helped kind of elevate you, and you're more than willing to pay it forward to the young, inspired, motivated, want to be producers, directors, filmmakers.
No doubt.
That's awesome.
Because I'm going to be old. I'm going to need them. So they better be good.
Okay, so you touched on digital a little bit. I'm curious, digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
Well, face-to-face is way better because, you know, people get a sense of who you are a lot more than online. I mean, it's sometimes it's impractical to have that face-to-face because you live far away or something. But,
yeah.
I mean, I've started a lot of relationships via Twitter and stuff like that. I got hired for like a BBC gig through Twitter, which
That's
is
awesome.
Insane.
Great testimonial for social media marketing.
Yeah. But I've had a lot of cool connections and, you know, other filmmakers that follow me or connecting on Twitter, which is awesome. But it's good place, like social media is a good place to start those connections and become familiar with someone. But if you can translate that into a face-to-face from that, you know, that's ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I agree with that. That's fantastic. So I know you mentioned this isn't too long ago, but if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
You know, I guess, I don't know, like I'm really happy with where I'm at now, so it's hard to say like change anything because mm-hmm. it's just kind of like kept falling forward. You know, made a lot of mistakes, but also I allowed myself to make those mistakes and kind of like figured out, not in the most
learning,
direct path.
Learning opportunities, not mistakes, right?
And just, you know, just kept fine tuning what I wanted to do, you know, but I would say, you know, I don't even know if it's a grip, but back in college, you know, I wish I knew what I wanted to do back then. I just didn't have like the belief in myself or didn't know that it was actually like a viable career option. You know, looking back, maybe I would have studied journalism or filmmaking.
Sure.
But also it's like, you know, I've had great opportunities. I don't know if it could have turned out any better. Like, I'm in a really good position as far as, like, who I've worked with and whose radar I'm on and making my own film. So, I don't know. It's hard because I guess it worked out. So, it's hard for me to go back and be like, well, what would you have done differently? But other than just maybe I could have been doing this, you know, 5 years earlier. I just, like, believed in myself and just gone with my initial gut because by the time I was like 26, 27 that I went freelance. And by then it was just like, it's not like I'm going to take a chance and do this thing. I was like, this is what I have to do. Like everything in my body is just like, this is what you have to do. And so, like, make the plunge and make it work. And it wasn't even, like, try and make it work. I was just like, I mean, I have really low overhead. Like, this is all I want to do with my life. So, it's like, really, I only had, like, $1,500 maybe in bills and living expenses at that time. So, I was just like, I mean, at that rate, I would have paid off my student loans. But, but I was just like, this is what I have to do, and I'm just going to make it work. And even if I'm poor the rest of my life, like, I'll enjoy doing this.
That's excellent.
I'm not saying, like, you should be a poor filmmaker for your whole life, because that's not the reality. But usually when you start, that's kind of
what. Well, everyone has to start somewhere. No, I think that's great. And I believe that, and I've heard a couple other people comment that they just wish they could have started earlier. But then I think those learning opportunities would have presented themselves, and those opportunities are kind of what molded you to who you are today, and kind of the opportunities that have been presented to you. So it's, I always think it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, no doubt.
I would say the more veteran or senior individuals who I interview have a completely different answer, as opposed to someone who's our generation, which is not millennial and it's not Gen X. It's like right in the middle.
The lost generation.
Yes. The Oregon Trail generation.
Still trying to figure out social media. Yeah. What the hell is Snapchat?
That one I can show you. All right. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
I mean, I could probably do it within the 2 degree. I mean, this filmmaking community is real small.
I'm
but,
sure.
Oh, that's a good, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, there's like a million filmmakers I'd like to meet, but I mean, the circles are so small. It's like there's probably 2 degrees of separation from any documentary filmmaker or executive producer at a company, probably. I don't have a name off the top of my head.
That's okay.
That. Yeah.
I like that question too, actually, because it inspires, well, it makes people think. Mm-hmm. And then when you comment like, oh, I could do it within the 2nd degree, there's a ton of people I'd love to meet with. Like, well, why aren't you doing it then?
Yeah.
What's stopping you?
Yeah. It's, I mean, these people are really busy. Like I tried to, for example, like, Ryan Coogler, who's like an incredible filmmaker, he did the Rocky remake. I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head. But anyways, Ryan Coogler, incredible filmmaker. He's doing the Black Panther film right now for, I think it's a Marvel film. But you know, I was trying to get him to executive produce my film because he had done a film called Fruitvale Station, which touched on a lot of similar topics.
Okay.
And he's like the man, you know, he's like big time. I think he was up for, you know, his first film played at Sundance. Like he's like one of the most sought after directors right now. I won a grant here in Milwaukee for my film, and on the jury was his friend Malik, who's also a filmmaker, but they went to UCLA film school together, and they're good friends. And so I was trying to get an EP, so I just emailed Malik. I was like, hey, can you reach out to Ryan Coogler and see if he'd be interested in possibly EPing this? He's like, oh, I think that'd be a great idea. Let me email him, you know? So it's like, that is like one of the top directors right now, and it was just one email, and nothing happened with that, but I did meet him. He was actually presenting Malik's film in Oakland when I was back home for Thanksgiving in the Bay Area. So I did get to meet him, but nothing happened as far as him. But it's like, yeah, the circles are small once you push yourself into those circles.
But I think it goes back to what you said earlier about, you know, you just have to make that initial touch and kind of plant the seed, and maybe something down the road will come of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very cool. So it sounds like you are similar to me in that you just never want to stop learning. You know, constant new worlds of education and things to learn are always in front of you. And I know you're more looking at a screen or through a viewfinder. I don't know if that's the right word or not. But what book are you reading right now?
Actually, I picked up a couple James Baldwin books. There's a lot of issues that are recurring in the film that I worked on. And, you know, the James Baldwin movie just came out. So it's like, you know, his legacy is kind of being rediscovered by a new generation, which is great. But as far as learning the craft, it's like, I mean, I'm reading news articles all the time and several blogs of filmmaking. So it's like I'm constantly digesting this material. It's tough, though, when you're working on a project to carve out time to learn new things, too. I mean, you're always learning new things while you're making a new project.
Sure.
Like, just like we mentioned earlier, organically. Like, yep. These things just happen. And right now, I'm learning a lot about the business side of filmmaking and figuring out distribution. Like, this is all over my head, but I'm calling a lot of distributors that are interested in our film. And, you know, kind of asking naive questions, even distributors that I'm probably not going to work with, but it's like, oh, I could pick their brain a little bit. You know?
Yeah, why not?
And so I guess I am learning a lot right now. I was going to say it's hard to carve out time to learn things when you're working on projects because you're so worried about working on the project and getting it done.
Yep.
But I guess I am learning a lot about the distribution process and things that I didn't necessarily knew I wanted to learn. But that are vital to making this a career.
Yeah.
It's even when you're in a project, though, you're going to be learning new things just as you're doing it, but trying to carve out time to keep that learning process going is key. And I should probably do a better job of that too.
I try to, at the minimum, to read 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so silly, but, and I switch between like the business professional books to, you know, like I'm wrapping up the fourth book of Harry Potter right now.
Yeah.
But I got my 10 minutes in this morning. So,
and what do you mean
good.
By 10 minutes? Like you're reading like a physical book?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So online articles or magazines don't count?
No.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, I'm constantly reading online article
for
magazines.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of the world that we live in is, you know, digital and social media. I just have a ridiculous amount of stuff being thrown at me constantly, but that's more like current event things, you
mm-hmm.
know. I want to read, and I'm really intrigued on reading. There's just so many books. I keep buying books, you know, and some are just to better myself and be a better business professional, better leader, better mentor to the people that are on my team. But others are just to kind of have that movie playing in my head, you know, and go into some random fantasy world and whatnot. So,
and reading like a long form thing, like you're really getting in depth on something. You're reading a lot of these articles and it's like just touching the surface on a lot of bigger issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, that really diving into a full scope book, you know, is helpful. And it's I need to do more of that because I'm reading a lot of these articles and one-off things, you know, and it's like trying to finish this film. But yeah, it's great.
I don't know, in a weird way, it brings some clarity to your mind by just kind of going and not
following
thinking.
The thought all the way
yeah.
through. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so as we're wrapping up here, any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
You know, it never ends. You know, you always got to be on it and reaching out to those people and, you know, maintaining those relationships. I don't have any particular bits of advice, but just keep at it. You know, it builds over time. And, you know, it took me probably 3 or 4 years before, like, I was really doing my own thing. Like, I was working under people for a long time. And so it doesn't really happen overnight. You know, you just something you got to stick with. And then eventually the chips fall in place and you'll know it when it happens. You know, you'll feel that you're ready to take that next step or close off a certain, you got to listen to what your mind's telling you. Cause usually it's like, you're scared to make that leap. And then, but your mind's just like, you got to do it. So just jump sometimes.
I'm really glad you touched on that because I was hoping that you would reiterate just that kind of overcoming your fear.
Yeah,
I think that it's so important. And once you do it, I mean, that window of fear is all like the pre, but while you're actually in the moment doing it, it's like that fear disappeared and you're like, holy crap, I'm actually doing this. Yeah. And it's awesome. And I'm going to reap some reward on some level.
And you're probably going to fail, but the next time you probably won't. And a lot of times you think you're failing in your head, but nobody else knows you're failing. You know?
Yeah. So, well, that's very true. The other thing that I really like you said is that, you know, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. That you, I mean, you were nurturing this and kind of stepping outside of your comfort zone for, you know, 3 to 4 years before it actually got to a point where you're like, wow, now I feel comfortable and I'm more confident and I'm still moving forward and things are starting to fall forward, like you said earlier. Yeah.
And even when you're doing things, it's like, I now even still am like, am I a fraud? You know, it's like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Like, you never really know what you're doing. You're just like doing the best you know how to do at the time, you know. Yeah. It's like, for example, you know, when I was in the New York Times and doing that, I was looking around, I was like, oh, I'm surrounded by all these famous journalists in this elevator and I have no business being here. I did not go to journalism school. Like, this is literally the first project I'm producing. And then, you know, it ended up being front page main story of the New York Times when it was done. And it was like insane experience. You know, it's like a lot of that is just luck and fortuitous networking that I didn't know I was networking. But also it's like, you know, the old adage, fake it till you make it. You know, I had really, I was just like, I had no business being there. But, you know, you have good help and you rely on the right people and you just persevere and push through and I don't know. Good things can happen.
Well, and I bet every single one of those journalists that was in that elevator was in your exact same shoes at one point in their life.
I thought you were going to say, looking at me like, he doesn't belong to be here.
No. I mean, they're sitting there. They probably had a very similar experience where it was their first day or whatever, their first big opportunity, and they're surrounded by all these, you know, big name professionals in the field, and they're going, am I supposed to be here? What am I doing here? So
it's a very intimidating environment.
I believe it. Eric, if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
You could reach me. My name is hard to spell. You could find it on Lori will post it up somewhere. But my website is just my name, ericyoung.tv. And then I'm on Twitter at ericyoungfilm. Instagram, eric_young. So you can find all that on the website.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on the show, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Eric Young for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.